Welcome to the March 14th regular planning commission meeting. Present. Actually, is your microphone? Sorry.
Here. Okay, what do I know? Yeah. Okay, will you start over? I'm sorry.
Okay. Welcome to the it's March 14th regular planning commission meeting. Present for here in this hall, Colleen Thompson, Nancy Tosta, and Daryl Fuller as our commissioners, and Elena is on Zoom. Yay. Oh, and I'm Tina Carlson. Yeah. So then our staff, we have Aaron Smith and Jessica Lefevre. And is there someone on Zoom?
Deputy Lacey.
Okay. thank you all for coming. Let's see. First thing on the agenda is to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda, Nancy Tosta.
I'll second that, Colleen.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Can I have a vote, please?
Aye.
Okay, Nancy Tosta, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Daryl Fuller, aye.
Okay, okay. Elena says aye. Okay, so we will continue. Is there any conflict of interest on anything on the agenda for the PC? And if so, please express it now. Okay, let's see. The agenda minutes, we have four of them. The first one is July 11th for the regular meeting, 2014.
January.
I'm sorry, January. January 11th. Thank you. 2014. What's that?
Can we do them all at the same time?
I have comments.
I was just wondering.
Yeah. Can I have,
sorry.
Does anyone have any comments, or can we go with an approval on that one?
Can I ask, I went through them and made several suggestions. Were they incorporated? Okay. Because I did not go back and.
And I will.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
Just for anyone, just because we're all getting so used to the Google Drive. So you make a comment or you've typed it, I accept it. And it shows up on the right-hand side, like when you make it, you know, it'll say like, Nancy made a comma or an S. That will still stay there, even if I accept it. It'll just say resolved underneath it, but that will still stay in the right-hand. So if you go in and you're like, my comment's still there. Yes, but it's been resolved and it'll still stay in the right-hand column. That way you can actually see what everyone has put in. But yes, so they have all been edited as of with everyone's edits through them. So.
Well, Jess, is it okay for you if we email them to you like I did this time, or do you really want them in on the Google Drive deal?
The Google Drive is way more convenient and time saving.
Okay.
Because okay. You can edit the document, like edit it as though you were editing it. It won't let you change it. I have to accept your edits. But if you don't feel comfortable enough right this second, email's fine. But we do want to move in the full the full area of going through the Google Drive is the best.
Cool.
But yes, yours were also, yeah, I took them all into account, so.
Okay, thank you.
Just a little weirdness on the first one, because when I bring it up, there it goes. Okay. Yeah, it takes a while to get used to. So can I have a motion to pass the January 11th, 2014? General meeting.
So moved.
Regular meeting. Okay, so moved. Okay.
Second.
Can I have a vote, please?
Wayne, aye.
Nancy, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Okay, the next meeting, we're approving is the work meeting for January 24th, 2024. Any comments for you? Okay, can I approve that meeting, please? Or can I have a motion to?
I'll make a motion to accept the January 24th work meeting minutes.
25th. It's a 25th.
25th.
January 25th.
It says 25th. Right, I know. That's it. Within the minutes, within the actual.
Minutes, it's correct, so. Are you looking at it right this time?
I'm looking in the minute.
Okay, so it's all meeting correct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Missy, aye. Daryl, aye.
I wasn't at that one, so I'll abstain.
Tina Carlson, aye. Work meeting passes. The regular meeting February 8th. Can I entertain a motion to?
I'll move to approve the minutes from the February 8th regular planning commission meeting.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Nancy, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Tina, aye. All right, it's passed. And the last one is the February 22nd work meeting. I know it was really long, but I really appreciated that this was lots of great comments for the public. And I think it's a great record for us to review in the future. So can I have a motion to move?
I'd like to make a motion to accept the February 22nd work meeting minutes.
Second. Nancy seconds.
Okay, can I have a vote, please?
Paulina, aye.
Nancy, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Tina, aye. Sorry.
Elaine, aye. You're good.
Okay. All right. This is our point where public comments can be made. Specifically on the agenda, if there's anyone who wants to say anything on the agenda. John, did you want to say something?
Yes, thank you. So in a discussion with the mayor, she felt that probably the most appropriate time for me to make any comments on behalf of the town council is at this point in the meeting. So I'll try to get through it very fast with your permission. As the town council liaison to the planning commission, I want to remind you of the priorities for the planning commission that the town council discussed at our February meeting. The top priority is revising the subdivision ordinance to comply with SB 174. Given that the town council will need to take action before the end of the year to finalize whatever recommendations you make, and we like to take a meeting between our public hearing and the vote, we'd like to see something in draft form from you by our September meeting. There are several areas where you need to make policy recommendations to your supporting planners regarding alternatives available under the new state law, and also recommend specific updates to the ordinances, codes, and standards that will be the only basis for reviewing future subdivision applications. To date, the only PC discussion has been regarding road design, and it has not really come to a conclusion. These codes and standards will affect the community, and some may be controversial. I highly suggest a planning commission public hearing on the codes and standards that are referred to in footnote 11 of the Utah League of Cities and Towns Model Ordinance, to have that public hearing in July, to allow planning commission amendments and vote in August, and that's only 5 meetings from now. Second, I have the town council requested timely action on an RV ordinance, and I'm happy to see that that item is being discussed tonight. Hopefully you can move this on to the town council after hearing a discussion. And I'm going to note that this fairly limited scope change has been on the planning commission agenda since October. So that's taken 6 meetings, and you've got 4 meetings to figure out everything else in SB 174. The multi-use path was referred to the Planning Commission in February for study of alternatives. Although a citizen committee is doing detailed work, the Planning Commission will need to approve the study results and keep the Town Council appraised of progress. As indicated in the memo I sent to Tina on February 26th, The next opportunity for submitting alternatives under the current grant is September of 2024, and the next opportunity to submit a completely new grant is January of 2025. So again, that Citizen Committee and the Planning Commission have a fairly well-defined timetable. Number four, the Planning Commission held a community housing forum in June of 2023, and that meeting resulted in many housing supply ideas that deserve Planning Commission consideration. The local housing shortage is immediate and getting worse each year. Number five, Lee's zoning vision memo was discussed by the town council in February, and the consensus was that this topic is not a priority until after the SB 174 changes are completed. There may need to be some cleanup of current zoning language to address contradictions, ambiguous wording, and inconsistency that might cause problems with the SB 174 requirements. But extensive rezoning of all of Boulder is a major undertaking that really needs to start with a general plan amendment.
Just let it rip. Let me go potty, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
I think that's covered all of my comments. So thank you very much. I will speak at the ordinance public hearing and CUP public hearing, but other than that, we'll only speak if somebody addresses a direct question to me. I will be on for the rest of the meeting.
Thank you, John. Any other public comments? Okay. All right. We'll move on. Shelley is not here as a commissioner meeting. That was her choice. She just wanted to listen in. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Moving on to the staff reports. We have I think we have three. Aaron, do you want to start first?
And you can always move the mic to the corner so you're not sitting in the light.
In the light.
Yes.
Thank you. Hello, it's Aaron Smith, zoning administrator. I've had a few inquiries related to potential subdivisions, but nothing that has materialized at this point as official. If those do come forward, then we'll go through the normal process for that. And then one request from me is that either someone from the Planning Commission work with me, or we host a work meeting to review and update the forms that we currently have listed on the website, especially now that some of the ordinances have been updated. And also, we may need to prioritize the development of a new form related to the RV discussion that we'll have or continue to have. So, and I don't know in terms of like timeline what makes the most sense, but ideally if we could do that work in the next couple of weeks and then come back to the next Planning Commission and share it out or discuss it then, that would be great. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Aaron. Does Caden want to go next? Or Lee would prefer?
I'm available, but Lee is my superior. Caden, so if Lee, wants to.
No, go ahead. Lee has some, I know what Lee's going to share. So this will be
okay.
Good.
So Caden Figgins, day job, Garfield County Planner and Economic Development Director, nighttime job, High Mountain Consulting, private consultant for various counties, particularly in the rural areas across the state of Utah. I've had conversations with Lee in the past, as well as Aaron, the mayor, and then obviously, with Jessica, surrounding the SB 174 primarily. And then, you know, I don't know how long a lot of you have been on the planning commission, but oh geez, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I went to Boulder Town Planning Commission and did a training on conditional uses. So if some of you have been there long enough, you may have remembered me from that. But I've been asked to kind of help with the SB 174 and the subdivision ordinance amendments. Jessica sent me a text from Tina, your chair. Three questions. Looks like number one, would I be using a model as a starting point? And short answer, I guess, would be no. Obviously, there's kind of best practices. If I were to use a model, it would actually be the Garfield County subdivision ordinance, just because I've recently worked on that one. But I think Cameron Deal with the League of Cities and Towns, it's his famous saying, you've probably heard it. His you know, most popular slogan is one size misfits all. So I would not, you know, look at another communities, or I don't plan to at least, and take language from that, just because Boulder is a unique town. And, you know, I think the best thing to do, would be either if you guys love your subdivision ordinance, which I don't think you do after several conversations, it would be to just make the simple amendments. Or I think there's, you know, enough assistance from the state that if you want to do a complete overhaul and not just focus on the requirements of SB 174, there's four main ones. There's obviously the new subdivision land use authority, removing the conceptual plan review meeting, whatever you all call it. In Garfield County, we call it sketch phase or sketch plan review meeting. The third one is, let's see, trying to keep them in order. I know the fourth one. Oh, the third one is the public comment. I think Boulder, do you guys require a public hearing in subdivision ordinances currently? Yes. So this one says you can only have one. So if you hold a public hearing and it's tabled for whatever reason and is postponed to a later meeting, the planning commission or town council cannot hold more than one public hearing. And then the final one, I think a lot of municipalities and counties have abused this in the past, is if the subdivision passes through, if a conceptual plan is held, it can be requested by the developer, which most of the time I think it should be, because that's where you kind of hash out all the details and you're going to save the developer, you know, tens to even hundreds of thousands of dollars in engineering fees. If you have this meeting, that's the whole point of it. So they're not guessing on, you know, the widths of roads and things like that. So if you have that and then it passes through the preliminary plat process and the final plat process, the new language from SB 174 says the municipality shall approve the subdivision. So in the past, land use authorities have kind of taken subdivisions somewhat like zone changes, where it's, you know, they've viewed it as an administrative land use decision, where even though it meets all the criteria, ultimately at the end of the day, based on public comment or, you know, whatever concerns are brought up, at the end of the day, the land use authority has still denied a subdivision application. And this new language says that if it meets all the requirements of state code, the town's ordinances, and, you know, and they have all the health department for wastewater feasibility, drinking water, power, all those things, it shall be approved. So that's obviously, you know, the first thing is SB 174. But then even just listening and in past conversations, both with Aaron and Jessica, there's, I think, some other things that should be addressed in the subdivision ordinance, infrastructure improvements / requirements. So, you know, roadways, both the new roads that should be developed, and if there's a proposed subdivision in a certain area and there's question on, you know, whether it's Lower Boulder Road or some of these others, if there's question on the existing access to get to the subdivision, and that's not certain, you know, if the property owner can't come and show whether it's recorded easements, town right-of-ways, or, you know, even have some type of proof of a private prescriptive easement, maybe the subdivision isn't feasible. So I think roads could be addressed and the language could be updated. And then obviously, you know, culinary drinking water, whether it would be a private system or connected to the town's wastewater. Boulder Town doesn't have a sewer lagoon. However, you still have, you know, certain lot size requirements, especially if a private well is to be drilled, or if Boulder Town even allows a private well to be drilled in town, fire protection. And then you can even address different utilities such as power, fiber. Nobody's going to do, you know, a propane, private propane company, but you could address where certain improvements go. And then exceptions to the full plat process, you know, minor lot subdivisions would be the next most common, and then maybe an agricultural land exemption. But then I don't know if Boulder deals with this, but I know a lot of the other communities in Garfield County do. People make up this term called a lot split. Oh, it's not a subdivision. It's just a lot split. Well, what the hell is that? You know, if you're dividing land into more than one lot, that's a subdivision. I don't know what this lot split is, but every community, it seems like, that I've ever talked to talks about these lot splits. So addressing that, dry subdivisions. Again, this is a very common thing in rural counties and municipalities. But if you have a subdivision that's already been created clear back in the 50s, 60s, or whenever, and, you know, the town's trying to address that and deal with that now. And it might be a nice developed subdivision with rights of way, or it might be an old meets and bounds subdivision you know, that easements and everything are an issue. So that can be addressed. And then the final thing that I had written down, and Jessica just brought it up, was I'm happy to create a new subdivision application for the town too, if that would be of interest. So those are kind of the things that I was planning on doing for the town. I'm happy to do more or less, and kind of whatever works for you all. And then I guess to answer the last question from that text, you know, what do I need from you all, and what does the process look like? So just barely this week, Monday, I heard back from Smith Harvingston, Adam Long. He's finally gotten that contract drafted up, and I think we'll finalize that, you know, either tomorrow or the beginning of next week. And then I'm ready to go to work on this. And the question was asked, you know, could this be done by September? Absolutely. So what I would do after the contract is in place and everything's good with the town, my thought would be that I would draft up the first, and I guess the first thing that I would need from the town would be, you know, the direction. Do you want to just take bits and pieces from your current ordinance, or do you want to start totally from scratch and draft a whole new entire subdivision ordinance and then rescind and supersede in its entirety the current one once this new ordinance is done? And then after I have that first draft, I think we'd schedule a work meeting first would be my recommendation, or just a public meeting, not a public hearing, just a public meeting to work with the town. And then once the town feels comfortable, we can have as many of those as we need. Once the town feels comfortable, we could work toward the public hearing to consider that ordinance in planning commission, and then ultimately by the town council. So that was long-winded, but I wanted to make sure I addressed all the questions. And if anybody has any for me, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay, can I hop in?
Oh yeah, go ahead, Lee.
I want to thank Caden for that explanation. And I think we can answer one question very simply, which is that we're going to start from scratch. The old subdivision ordinance does not have much to recommend it and has caused everyone here various problems at various times. And I will say, and Caden and I discussed this, that we're hoping that we could have something from him by June. What we have to do, and Tina, I feel like we may be getting ahead to your last agenda item, which is how we move forward. But given the hour, if you will indulge me for about 2 minutes about moving forward, maybe we could just deal with it right now, since Caden has kind of set the tone of moving forward. The critical thing that we have to allow Caden to complete his work is to have a zoning ordinance that sets a framework for subdivisions. And we've been distracted with RVs and other issues. We have talked about more than the road standards. We've talked repeatedly about the density standards. and how those would work for new subdivisions. And what I would like to propose is that for the April regular meeting, since I will actually be present in Boulder, that we do a work session that attempts to answer the question of how you all want to deal with the fundamental subdivision issues of lot size and shape and density. If we can get those issues up to a point where people understand and say, hey, this is a good interim starting place, then putting together the standards in the subdivision regulations will be pretty straightforward. And the zoning will be set up to dictate things like overall the density or the intensity of use. And I would propose that we do the April 11th session essentially as a subdivision game, where we give planning commission members and the public some maps of some parcels and some sketchy but helpful directions and let them work on it and see if we can come out of the evening with a, hey, we like this or we don't like that. If that works, it will take me a couple of weeks to draft the language, and we could be talking about zoning amendments in May or June. So questions for either me or Caden.
Yeah. So yes, questions from the Planning Commission.
One thing I would say, and I'm sure this is where, you know, Lee is guiding the town, and I'm sure this is what the town is thinking, but as far as minimum lot sizes, considering the fact that septic systems, you know, are the only option, I wouldn't go less than a half acre. It's almost impossible to have a home and a septic on less than that. And then as far as road standards, I know that's one thing that the town's been kind of going back and forth on for a long time. And I'll freely admit the county has as well. Many of you might have remembered Brian Bremner, former public works director. He liked to do everything handwritten. And so still to this day, we went off a handwritten page from Brian Bremner from 19 whatever of road standards, you know, that has the engineered renderings of the road with the crown and the bar ditches on the side. We actually hired Sunrise Engineering to do a road standards table that we would happily share with all of the municipalities in the county at no cost. We'll just give it to you guys. And the whole goal is to say, you know, give us a 1 to 2 pager that we can hand to, you know, an equipment operator that's doing the grade work in the subdivision. And they know exactly what specs to design a road to, that, you know, are county certified, which would obviously be municipality certified. And they kind of dropped the ball. Sunrise did on that. They ended up screaming and yelling at us saying that we hadn't paid the dues. And we said, well, we haven't paid you because we haven't gotten the document. So we'll probably go somewhere else just based on the interactions, but we're going to have that done this summer. And it's a priority of ours to add it to our own subdivision ordinance. And again, we would be more than happy to share that with all the communities in Garfield County. So if that was one area, you know, that you guys were really kind of stressing over, we'd love to kind of take that burden off your shoulders.
Well, that lets me hop in again and get back to something that John said as he related the council's advice to the Planning Commission. And he passed over it rather quickly. But it is important, which is that once we are somewhat clear on things like road standards and the density of subdivisions, that we're going to need to get back to the general plan. And I think one of the things that the general plan is the best of the documents that you guys have. It needs the least work, but one thing it doesn't say that I think needs to be said is to express Boulder's desire not to have suburban roads, to maintain a very Boulderish set of road standards. And presumably the Garfield County work will include something like that, but we haven't seen that, so we don't know. But I do want to say that we're going to need to have a policy statement about the roads that really goes back to work that John did months ago. You will all remember, those of you who saw it, the images that he created showing suburban roads versus rural roads. And our current subdivision regulations, of course, are very suburban, inappropriate for Boulder. And we're going to need to have standing in front of whatever Caden gives you as proposed road standards. We're going to need a paragraph or so in the general plan that says, hey, here's what it's all about, which is to keep Boulder the sort of backcountry place that everyone wants it to be. So we may be able to, in fact, I think perhaps we can get to that general plan change, that one change in the general plan pretty quickly here, so that Caden has it as general guidance as he works on the more detailed pieces of what needs to happen. But I'm happy to be working with Caden and having his support to get the details of this done while we think about the big picture of what should a subdivision actually look like in Boulder. So with that, if the commission is amenable to what I proposed for April 11th, I would be delighted to let you go on with your hearings and feel like we fulfilled the what happens next, or at least my part of the what happens next, and let you guys work on your gravel pit. So if there are questions, and again, questions for Caden as well, maybe we can have dispatched at least part of that last agenda item right now.
Thank you, Lee. That was great. So I have a question from Daryl.
So my question, well, I guess I don't want to spend a tremendous amount of time and money on something. I'm really curious whether we're going to get a lot of pushback on the, I can't remember the name, the official name for it, but the spacing and the requirement that either some like 80 or 90% of your land can't be developed in a lot of different ways. So limiting your house and whatnot. So I think a lot of people might have some pushback on that. And so throwing all of our eggs into that basket, I think is dangerous.
Can you explain that?
I can't remember the term it's called, but it's you can only develop a certain portion of the land. Lee said that it only works, like, if the number is 50%, then it doesn't make any sense to structure the ordinance that way. So for it to work, it's got to be like 80 to 90% of the land is prevented from being developed. You can develop it for ag and whatnot. It can be for ag use, but you can't do other uses. And so anyhow, that was just something that I don't know if a lot of people in the town realize that that's on the table, that we might be telling them, hey, yes, you own your land, but 85% of it is greatly restricted in what you can do.
Need to have the meeting on April 11th and let people play with the idea. You have to remember that it is a misnomer to say they're not developing the land. If they submit an application where the homes they're permitted to construct occupy 15% of it and the other 85% is open, it's all developed by any definition that counts in terms of their legal rights. And the question is just whether that works for people. And I think the way to explore it is to lay out some maps, and I'm getting ready to buy a bag of Monopoly houses and let people take a hand at arranging things and seeing what works and what doesn't in a somewhat more tangible gaming type of thing. And we've been over this four or five times, and it still strikes me that it isn't quite concrete for people. So I think we need to do something that's very hands-on, invite the public and see what the reaction is. And you will know If that's acceptable to the Planning Commission, you'll have some pretty good idea of what the reaction is at the end of the meeting on April 11th.
Okay, Nancy, question?
So I have several comments. And I'll start with the fact that we just heard that it is not a priority of the town council for us to look at zoning right now. So I find that, you know, in conflict with saying that we're going to move forward on this. I also think it's premature to have sort of a public discussion about this when obviously the planning commissioners don't totally understand. I mean, Lee, you say we've talked about it four or five times, very much in passing. We've never had an in-depth discussion about what are these zones and what might occur to them. There's no way I could explain to anybody in my neighborhood, you know, what's actually going on here. And I think you're totally underestimating how much work it's going to be to try to change our zoning at this point in time. I mean, that's a massive endeavor. And to use up one of our limited meetings when we need to be, we have a very definite deadline that we need to meet with SB 174. I realize that now our subdivisions are going to be dependent on what our zoning is. We do have zoning now. I mean, we have 5-acre minimums. I mean, we know something about our zoning. I think once we do the SB 174, the subdivision form, the code changes and the forms, we'll have maybe a better idea of how we might want to tackle some of the open space protection, how we might want to think about some of that zoning. But I think it's really premature to have a big public meeting and move monopoly houses around. Well, I like the concept of people being able to see this. I think we're not ready to do this. I mean, I realize you're going to be in Boulder. I mean, I would appreciate you talking to the Planning Commission about some of the details in SB 174. Let's talk about the roads when you're here and have, you know, some ability to actually see what Caden's working on, what that draft is, see how we would want to change it. Some of the things we know we have to do in order to comply with SB 174. So I just think opening up the zoning discussion, and particularly when we've been told by the town council it's not their priority, is not something we should be doing right now. So I'm not in favor of doing that.
So I have a question. What I heard was that in order for what we have in the subdivisions to be changed for this SB 74, we need to have some criteria within our zoning. My question is, in the use of what we now have as average lot sizes, what are we doing with that? Are we would we be developing standards within our zoning, or would we need to be in our subdivision, one of the two? Does that make sense?
That's a reasonable question. And the answer, and also looping back to Nancy's assumptions, it's clear to me that we're not going to talk about changing zoning districts. And so that, I think, is what the council said. The thing that we do not have in the current subdivision regulations or anywhere other than the 5-acre minimum lot size is any direction other than you can average lots, lot sizes now. If we're going to have successful subdivision regulation, we have got to be able to say some things that are nowhere in the code about lot size, lot shape, lot arrangement on the land. And that's why you move the monopoly houses around, is to see how people react to different ways of doing that. And, you know, if that's not, that's not going to work for the Planning Commission, that's your choice. You'll be implementing SB 174 without enough direction to do anything except 5 acre minimum lot sizes. If that's what you want, okay.
Thank you. I think I will, if nobody else has any questions at this point, I think we should have this discussion with the Planning Commission at the end of the meeting so we can come to some kind of agreement. Thank you. Any other questions for Lee or Caden?
Yeah, Lee, just quickly with what you were just saying. So are you saying that as it stands, the average lot size stuff that we pass through doesn't need, yeah, just like needs more clarification around what you can actually do?
That's a good question. And what the minimum lot, or the average lot size provisions that were adopted do right now is they allow a landowner who says, hey, I want to do something other than a 5 acre minimum lot size in order to use my land more effectively from my point of view. They allow a lot owner to do that. And so they give the lot landowners a lot more flexibility than they have had in the past. And I think that in and of itself is an accomplishment and a good thing. What there isn't is any guidance to that landowner about town policy, except perhaps vague guidance in the general plan about, are you supposed to avoid riparian areas? Are you supposed to create certain types of view corridors? All of those different pieces of thinking that go into laying out a subdivision. And right now, honestly, the only guidance of any real use to a landowner in the code is, hey, you can have a 5 acre minimum lot or you can average. Some landowners will say, hey, I can do the averaging. It works for me, right? And that's cool. But if the Planning Commission wants to have any guidance beyond that, then you need to work on it.
And okay, I have one other question for you, Lee. And when you are talking about guidance, it's similar to what we do with our CUPs in that we have guidelines, right?
Exactly. So you would be creating a list, probably a fairly short list of standards that say avoid this, emphasize that, work with the terrain, I mean, would be kind of the overlaying theme probably. But there may be other differences that the community and the Planning Commission want or need to talk about. You got to think about compatibility with adjoining land uses, whether it be agriculture or other homes as well. And those guidelines have never been in the subdivision ordinance because it was always assumed that everything would be negotiated one case at a time. And they really haven't been in the zoning until we took the first step of allowing landowners to do some averaging. And so again, you face two choices. One is to comply with SB 174 in a way that gives the landowners one easy choice, which is 5 acre lots, or for those who are more creative, the averaging. The other is to comply with SB 174 in a way that gives some guidance out of the general plan and out of the community's conversation about this, about what a subdivision in Boulder looks like. It comes back to what I was saying about the roads. If you don't provide guidance, you're going to get the suburbs. That's what's easy for landowners to do. If that's what you want, cool. I don't really think it is.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? All right. I would like to move on to the next thing on the agenda. Let's see if I can get myself.
Do you want me to talk about or women awake. Perfect.
Let's see. That was staff reports. Sorry.
And I feel like maybe I can say, Caden, at that point, that was awesome. That's exactly what we were asking from you. If you want to hang out for the rest of the meeting and see what's going on, you're more than welcome. But at this time, I think it's been awesome that you are on. We really appreciate it. And if you need to go, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you, Caden.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And let me know for future meetings, that April meeting, what you decide. And if I'm around, I'll try to make meetings in person, and then worst case scenario, I'll do these virtual attendances. But I'll get to work with Smith Harvingson, try and get that contract finalized in the next week or so, and then we'll try to move forward on it.
Great.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Let's see. Sorry. I need to quickly report on something else too. On the committee that was talked about the active path options. That committee is having its first meeting this Saturday between 6 and 8. I was planning on being there as the liaison. If anyone else would rather be there, or another planning commissioner can be there at the same time. In putting the committee together, my pegboard didn't wasn't fruitful. Barbara Van Quill did agree, and Troy Julian also agreed to be on it. So it's Keith Watts, Dave Beal, Mark Nelson, Barbara Van Quill, and Troy Julian to start this committee off. And I'm sure they're going to immediately start to press for more community conversations too. So that's the report I have. Any questions on that? I will be reporting back on that, and I will be taking minutes at that meeting, recording and taking minutes. Let's see, the next thing on our agenda is the public hearing for Ray Gardner at CUP. And before we start, I would like to have Erin just give her report on this, and then we'll go into public comment.
Right. So the discussion for Ray Gardner's gravel pit CUP, the conditional use application was received by myself, the zoning administrator, electronically on February 26, 2024. It was reviewed for completeness and was found administratively complete on March 3rd, 2024. The application was added to today's Planning Commission agenda and distributed to the Planning Commission for review on March 4th, 2024. The conditional use application will be reviewed under requirements that fall in Section 153.415, the Commercial Development Standards. The application proposes installation of a gravel pit in the southwest portion of the Gardner property at milepost number 88. This proposal is for a business-to-business commercial endeavor and not intended for direct use by general public. The proposed plan has four phases and accounts for the full life cycle of the gravel pit. There are no buildings or structures. Ray has provided comments to the worksheet found under Section 153.416, the Commercial Standards Review Worksheet. I have reviewed all items considered absolutes, and all absolutes are compliant.
Thank you, Erin. Okay, I would like to entertain a motion to leave the regular meeting and move into the public hearing for Ray Gardner's gravel pit conditional use permit, proposed at the southwest corner of Gardner property at mile post 88. was 88, and I do have a parcel number if that's necessary. I'll just say it. 002-0005-0022. Okay, so can I have a motion?
I moved to close the regular meeting and move into a public hearing.
Great. Can I have a second?
Colleen Thompson, I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved in second. Can I have a vote?
Nancy Tosta, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Carol, aye.
Elaine, aye.
Janet, aye. The vote is unanimous. So, all those present in the room need to log on to a sign in, and the staff will be responsible for recording all of those on Zoom. There has been the proper 10 days notice to the town website on and to the public notice, Utah public notices, and the community bulletin board. Are there any members in the PC who have conflict of interest regarding this hearing subject? Sorry, I need to ask that. Okay. At this time, we will take statements from the public. Oh, actually, we will take questions from the public. So questions can be asked from the public directly to the PC or the ZA at this time, and just questions, please, first. Is there anyone who has a question?
I want to make sure you only left the regular meeting. You put in a motion to start the public hearing. You do.
Oh, great. Yeah. Sorry. I meant to say both of them.
I wrote. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, no questions. So at this time, we'll just take statements from the public. Statements are to, Shelley or Tony, whichever.
I'm unmuting this. Hey, my question is with the gravel pit, is it ever going to go out on Highway 12, and will there be any debris on the road, and how is it handled? That's my only question. Thank you.
I think that will be answered in the review, but I don't even know. It does meet the requirements of accessing Highway 12. There will be trucks on Highway 12 transporting gravel to other places in Boulder. Does that answer your question?
Just that if things drop on it, you know, people might have windshields and stuff that are broken. How is he planning on handling that? Is it going to be a covered truck? Are we requiring that?
The trucks with gravel come in and out of Boulder frequently, and so that it'll be no different than trucks coming into Boulder. There's just like any truck that has gravel in it that comes into Boulder at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Any other questions? I'll move it to statements from the public based on this application and the ordinances that are held to it.
John Brandt.
John.
Why don't we let anyone in the room or other people speak first?
You're the only one who's raised their hand.
All right. Thank you. So I'm going to clarify. I'm speaking tonight from two different hats, I guess. As the TC member in charge of the roads department, I will speak on the benefit of this to the town, but I also need to disclose that I assisted Ray in preparing for tonight's meeting, but I did that as a private citizen and a friend, and I received no compensation for this work on his behalf. I have no personal interest in the project, and the final decision regarding the content and timing of any supplemental material that was submitted to the Planning Commission was up to Ray. Okay, so having a local source of sand and gravel, road base, and erosion control rock will benefit Boulder Town directly by providing material for the maintenance of our municipal roads. And that's especially important after we have something like the big storm last spring, where Sam Stout was trying to scrounge gravel from anywhere he could to do emergency repairs because there was nothing available in town. Private landowners also benefit by having a local supply of material for driveways and other construction. I think that Tina quite adequately addressed that we're already hauling gravel into Boulder from Wayne County and Escalante. The impact of something coming from a local pit will be much less than having trucks coming up over Boulder Mountain or across the Hogsback. I did visit the site with Ray. I verified that the project will have minimal visual impact from Highway 12 due to existing trees near the highway and the long distance across the pasture land to the pit. The project is currently on unirrigated rocky land that is part of an existing ranch operation, and the adjacent land to the south and west is national forest, so there really aren't noise or dust impacts on nearby residents. So I strongly approve PC approval of this application.
Thank you, John. Anybody else? Okay, I'd like to entertain that I would like to make a motion. Can I make this motion? I would like to make a motion that we close the public hearing and open to the regular planning commission meeting.
Second.
Can I? All right, can I have a vote?
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Nancy, aye.
Caroline.
Elena, aye.
Anna Carlson, aye. Okay, great. So this is how we're going to start this. I would like to state that Aaron has resolved all of the absolutes and that our job is to review the relatives. But I would like to give the Planning Commission if they have any questions or concerns about any of the absolutes before we move to the relatives. This would be questions or, clarification, whatever you want. Ray, I forgot to let you have a say in hearing, but it didn't seem like you needed to. But yeah. Okay. So you will have questions from us probably here coming up. And so you will have to come to the mic eventually. Okay. Sorry. Let me make sure I'm not missing anything. Okay. So what I think is going to work best here is that we will go through the relatives. the relative statements and comments provided by Ray, and each commissioner will be given an opportunity to comment, and Ray will be asked to clarify, and with each we will confirm an agreement on the reasonings and or objections with the description that Ray gave us. And then also he actually scored it too. So we will need to have some kind of confirmation on that or agreement on that. Is this reasonable to everyone? Any concerns? Okay. Okay. So the first relative that's on here is the moderate slopes. And the Ray's comment was the axis and pit avoid slopes gather slopes greater than 15%. The average slope for the south and north is 2%, and the side hill to the west averages 8%. And in our ordinances, it says to avoid 15 to 30% slope. According to what I found in the standards. Is there, do I have an agreement, any concerns about that statement? Can I have, can we just do hands as agreeing that this is appropriately addressed? Okay, I have hands from all three. Elena, can you just say aye?
Hold on. Oh, did we leave yep, aye.
Okay, thank you. The next one is crossings. The vehicle access requires a stream crossing, and the crossing is perpendicular, which is the shortest feasible distance. So, and if you look at the map, thing.
It's absolute.
Oh, sorry, my bad. So,
2E.
Sorry. 2E, work area is screened from the highway view by distance and undisturbed terrain. The project is uphill from the highway and the screening by trees along the creek, which is along the highway. And the work site being monetarily seen from the highway, but only if you're not looking on the road. I like that one. So yes, the distance, and actually there will be no trees taken out, is for this particular project. Is that correct, Ray? Okay. And the weight and the score was 3. Do I have any concerns about that or corrections? Can I have a hand? Oh, go ahead, Nancy.
Just to clarify, so the option here, the would be a +2. Looks like Ray scored himself a +1, maybe because you could see it from the road if you looked. I mean, you know, a better score. I mean, it sounds to me that it's he's complied with everything that needs to be complied with, but you gave yourself a +1 rather than a +2, which would have been the maximum score.
Yeah, that's great. Right.
Like, you should just
fine.
Stay up there.
And... Oh, I'm not, I think you'll notice he didn't push hard on the scores. I think he could have pushed harder.
Right.
Easily,
right.
But so
I wondered if you were modest because if someone isn't looking at the road, they can possibly see your gravel pit. And that's it. But it sounds like it's well screened.
It would be sure. If somebody's looking for it, they will be able to spot it. More so a passenger in a vehicle, but a driver, especially northbound on that stretch of the roadway, isn't likely to see it. More so southbound, looking to the west, southwest.
I actually saw that when I was coming home. I did look. I wasn't driving. Okay. So can I have a hands up for agreement? Okay, and Elena?
Yeah, good for me.
Okay, thank you. So that's full agreement. The next one is 3B, retaining vegetation. Existing vegetation.
3A.
3A. What did I say?
3B.
I'm sorry. 3A, retaining vegetation. Existing vegetation along this creek will be retained. The pit is in an area already cleared for agricultural. And so basically, I think he's retaining all the vegetation other than the field itself. The recommendation was a 0 score. So can I have agreement on that one? Okay, and Elena?
Yeah.
Full agreement. Okay. Okay. The next one is 6D.
4D. Isn't it? On the relative.
It's not applicable.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Are we looking at the relatives?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so it was 4D that was next. So 60 is the next one.
Okay. 60, land use intensity. The scale of the 4-acre pit is appropriate because disturbed area occupies less than 5% of the contiguous private property. It is located in the area of agricultural and forest service land and is far from other developments. He gave himself a 6. So a score of 2. Anyway, so is there any questions on that? No? Okay. Can I have that a hand?
Tina.
Go ahead.
Tina.
Yeah.
That one confused me, the 6. Where does the number 6 come from? If it's a...
Each one has a weight.
Weight of 3.
A weight of 3. Okay. So 4 times the weight equals the final 30.
Okay.
Weight is final points. So each one has a weight. Some are
heads.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, okay. I mean, I'd like to talk about that one. I think, like, as a percentage of the whole place, it might be small, but 4 acres is pretty big.
Right. There's nothing in the actual standards that specifically says about outside disturbance based on acreage. I don't believe. Ray, do you want to comment on that at all?
I'm not aware of a particular limit.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
That it occupies less than 5% of the contiguous private land. So that's not very much. 5%?
Right.
I mean, it says right on here that it's less than 5%.
Right. So, Ray, can you just tell us the total acreage on that property? About, approximately?
Approximately... south all the way to north, bordering what was the Jepson property, about 185-190 acres.
And it's not a real productive, I mean, it's pasture land, but it's less productive than what's next to it. And I'd almost think that it'll be better pasture land after it's level, then you can water it easier once the gravel and sand are taken out.
Okay, so is there, do you want to make a recommendation, Lena, of any change on that?
I don't know, I guess I'm not clear enough on if when we say land use intensity, we mean of the specific property or of, because it sounds like Ray's referring to like continuous private land, even other people's land. I'd have to look, and I don't have it in front of me right now, what we mean by land use intensity, if we mean on a specific property or not.
That's not really what Ray was saying. What he was saying was the old Jepson is part of that now. So it's not like it's a different.
Oh, okay. So when he was referring to the Jepson property, he owns that piece now.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay. That's okay. Got it. Yeah, that's fine for me.
Okay, so can I have a hands up for agreement? All of us and Elena. That's a full agreement. Okay. The next one is 7B, A, B, and C, outdoor workspace.
7B. 7B is the only relative one is 7B.
Okay, the area is screened from the highway view by distance and the highway and undisturbed terrain. Okay, he gave himself a 3. Can I have an agreement on that?
Gave himself a 1. For the width.
A plus 3 is the total.
Which again is modest.
Yeah. But can I have agreement?
Yep.
Okay, all of us here, Elena?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, the outdoor sales and landscape is the next one, if I am correct. The work area is screened from the highway view by distance and from the highway and undisturbed terrain. This again is the same. And he gave himself a score of 3, all right. What is that called? Weight of 3. Well, it's not a weight, it's
a score.
Score. One and a weight of 3. Weight of 3. Score of 1 and weight of 3, which is times, so it's 3 total. Can I have an agreement with that? Okay, all of us in here and
yep.
Yes, Elena. Okay, full agreement. Okay. Then the frontage parking is the next one. The statement was no frontage parking. So this would be frontage parking, meaning along Highway 12. Can you just describe the trucks will not park on Highway 12. They'll go in and out from the gravel pit, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There's no reason
for
anyone parking. To park along Highway 12.
Okay, so he gave himself a final of 3. Is there any, is there agreement on this? Everyone yeah. here and Elena, full agreement. The buffer, the pit is buffered by 400 feet distance. And of course the trees on the highway. This is from the highway and from really any, that's the highway specifically, but again, I believe there's no neighboring that is even within the 400.
Correct. The closest other property owner would be the Mark Austin property to the south behind the cemetery back in there. But between the two properties, it's pretty dense. Pinyon juniper, it's well screened.
Thank you. Can I have agreement on that? Okay. All of us here, Elena,
yep.
Full agreement. Okay, the internal landscape. The area between the highway and the pit is irrigated agricultural. So internal landscape, distance, let's say here. Oh, that's not applicable.
This is
not applicable. That's what I have here too. Yeah. It's not really applicable. The next one is also not applicable. But go ahead, Elena. No.
What's that? I'm good.
I thought I heard you. So number 10, internal landscaping and building access. There's no building access. So neither one of those are applicable. So I'm going to pass on that unless somebody has a different idea. And then the rest of them here, the 18B is employee housing, which is non-applicable. Reflectivity from buildings, there's no reflection of the gravel pit that would be like a building, and the color not applicable. The building lines, the detached forms, and those are all non-applicable. Can we all agree on those?
Yes.
Okay. So hands, blah blah, and we're all there. Okay. And then the last one is the local value addition. This project will provide a local source of sand gravel for construction and maintenance of driveways and town roads.
I think it's much needed.
Right.
It's local here.
Okay, so can we all agree?
Yeah.
Everyone here and Elena. This is full agreement for all of the relatives. So now I'd like to entertain that we have a final motion on this application.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
I'm not really sure how to we're calling this a gravel pit, and we don't have gravel pit as a definition in our definitions, but we do have borrow pit, and I think that we should be calling, and so I want to read it. It's just one sentence.
Okay.
So it says, an area used for excavating sand or fill material for transport to another location. That's it. So we have no definition for a gravel pit per se. But we do have a definition for a borrow pit.
So I guess my comment would be a borrow pit is just dig up whatever's there and use it, whereas a gravel pit, you process rock and dirt and sand to create, a gravel product. So that is what my understanding is, the difference between the two.
And I'd like to say that this is the process that we have put together since 2018 to deal with commercial development, and that old table has become obsolete in general. It's one of those things, housekeeping things, that needs to be dealt with.
So it's not obsolete yet until it's taken out.
True, but it's not being used at all as far as how we actually apply for our ordinances, our commercial development.
You just do that?
We just did it.
Yeah, we did it.
So I'm just.
Can I hop in there to help Tina?
Okay,
on raised gravel pit, but I can comment on definitions. When we made the changes, and I guess Colleen was the only Planning Commission member who remains from that time, we defined everything of this nature as a commercial use. And so the term borrow pit is simply irrelevant. The proposal here is clearly a commercial use within the definition of commercial that exists in the code now. And the fact that borrow pit wasn't removed is just a matter of housekeeping that needs to be dealt with. But you're not processing this under the table uses as a borrow pit or anything else in the table uses except as what it is by definition, which is a commercial use. And that would be true if at this point in the game, all industrial and commercial projects fall under the word commercial, and therefore the checklist applies. And that's what you've done a very good job of just going through.
Thanks, Lee. I should have asked you to answer that question. Sorry. There we go. All right. So I need a motion to accept this application as fulfilling the needs that we have here in town for conditional use permits.
So I'll move to approve application, conditional use and site plan application from Ray Gardner for a gravel pit.
Okay, I'll second that. Okay, so before the vote, I need to have that reiterated, or know that it's with us. So is that okay? Is that what you're doing? No. Okay. So can we just take a moment to write it down? So I, okay. Yeah, thank you.
You use the correct words.
Conditional use and site plan application.
Make a motion to move forward to pass Ray Gardner's conditional use site plan application for a gravel pit.
Okay, can you just say that?
Well,
oh, is that right?
I think that's.
Yeah. Do we move this to the town council?
No, this is final.
Approved. Okay. So yes, that was what I said.
Okay. Thank you, Jessica. Okay, so the motion is to move forward.
I don't think I was moving it. I moved to approve.
Governance conditions by. Okay, so we don't want to name it as a gravel pit.
Yes. Well, that's what the proposed conditional use is. Yeah. The conditional use and site plan application for a gravel pit.
Okay. All right, I got it. Okay, so the motion is to approve Ray Gardner's conditional use site plan application for a gravel pit. And I have a vote.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Nancy, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Elena, aye.
Carlson, aye. Approval. Okay. That was better than the last one, right, Ray?
Yeah, I'm getting better, and so is everyone else.
Yeah, and I really like the process, so for this particular. Okay, thank you. The next public hearing that we will be discussing is the updated RV ordinance draft. And this one, Nancy would like to give a review of the ordinance for clarity to the public and, of course, the PC on the draft. Sure. So I will go ahead and let you do that before we close for public or general public.
So I did some work on this. Lee provided some input. Don provided some input. This basically came out of the meeting that we had on February 22nd, where we went through about a half a dozen different options for how we might handle RVs. And what I took away from that, I think we sort of summarized it at the end of the meeting, were three areas where we seem to have general consensus. Now, I think there may be some debate on the actual numbers, but this represents three places in our code that we will change options for RVs. A lot of what's in these several pages is actually housekeeping, things that needed to be changed because we were putting these changes in our code. So I think it looks more complicated than it is, and that's partly because our codes are less than ideal. I'll just leave it at that. So the three changes were to add an option for allowing an RV as employee housing on commercial property. So that's one change. The other is to change the length of time that someone can live in an RV during construction. And the third is to eliminate limits on the stays in RV parks, to eliminate the 180 days and essentially make it at the discretion of the RV park owner. So those are the three major changes. And I can walk through this. Again, it looks much more confusing than I think it needs to be, but partly that's because some of these things, when I went through our code and tried to figure out where we would make these changes, I found things like living in an RV while you're constructing a house was under the heading conditional use permits. And we didn't it didn't need to be under the heading of conditional use permits. The way this has changed is it's a temporary use permit, and there's a whole separate section in our code for temporary use permits. So it's just, you know, moving things around so that they fit under the sections where it's most appropriate for them to fit. So that's sort of a general overview, and I can go through this in more detail. Maybe I'll just say something about the table of uses because we referenced that a minute ago. As Tina said, this this needs work, and I think, you know, one of our future items needs to be to think about the table of uses and the role it plays in our code, along with conditional use permits and sort of our forms. Aaron brought up at the beginning of the meeting, you know, the need to work on some of our forms. There will be a need to work on the temporary use permit forms because they don't align. I'm not sure that they align with our current code, and they won't align exactly with these changes in code. So we definitely, before this becomes law, we will need to change those permit forms because they're not right. And they're hard to use. I mean, and I think Ray discovered challenges of the commercial use permits not aligning. The application and the form that we evaluate them on don't align. And so those are some changes that'll need to be made. But we did make some changes in the table of uses to allow the idea of there being employee housing in the first one, for example. The yellow in this, and hopefully you have it printed in color, the yellow highlights things that have changed. There is an addition here of commercial use existing before 2021. I may not be able to totally explain this because there were changes made in our code that eliminated commercial in our zoning, even though on our zoning map, it shows commercial zones. And if someone else wants to weigh in here to explain, you know, why this is necessary, but basically most of the commercial use that we have in town is not covered by a commercial use, a conditional use permit. But we know that it's allowed. So it's allowed in commercial zones. And again, I may be totally bungling this, and Colleen or John or Lee or someone else may need to.
We only have certain we only have certain commercial properties that are commercial, and that's all we have, and we don't have the ability for, and so you have to go through a commercial use permit to create any kind of commercial new commercial property.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
More or less.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that these
which is, I think, unusual, our town, because of that. Because nobody's ever put in any more commercial properties since those were put in.
Right. I mean, 2021, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It is hard.
Can I hop in here?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you. Yeah.
What happened when we adopted the checklist that you guys used very successfully on the gravel pit is that there were several commercial zoning districts that had been created over the years, occupied in every case by an existing commercial use. And when we switched to allow commercial to float and be plunked down in accord with the checklist, as you guys just did, all of those became obsolete in the sense that we're not making zoning map amendments for these anymore. The commercial uses exist within the GMU zoning district as it stands now. And the changes that had to be made in what Nancy is presenting to you all is to make sure that those commercial uses have the same rights to employee housing as a commercial use that has a conditional use permit. So that's the essence of it, is just trying to make sure that the existing commercial uses, Hills and Hollows, the Lodge, you all know what they all are, have the same right to have employee housing as a new commercial use. And that that's really the reason for the change, is just to be sure that everyone understands that not just new commercial uses can have employee housing, but the existing ones are allowed to apply for that as well. Okay.
Thank you, Lee. So, again, this table of uses is deceptive in some ways, because there's a heading here that says zoning district, and it implies there's a commercial
right.
zoning district. There isn't any such thing, really. So this just whole thing needs some work. But the changes that were made in it were to allow RVs to be located where we are now saying they will be allowed to be located when we're writing the code language. So that's the point of making these changes in the table of uses. So moving on, the 153-156, this whole section has been moved to 153.175 because of what I just said. It originally was under the heading conditional use permits, but we are not going to require a conditional use permit to put an RV on your property while you're building a house. That's a temporary use permit. So it's been moved to the section heading temporary use permits. And what's a little confusing, among many other things in our code, is the titles of these sections don't have any numbers. They're just, you know, a title. So sometimes if you reference a particular code, so sections starting from 153.170 are under the heading temporary uses. So, so that's where under 153.172, the allowed temporary uses will allow, and there's things here. I included the full section of each of these so you could see when we added a C here, you could see what A and B were, so that it wasn't, you didn't have to jump back to American Legal to see the code. And then it seemed it was easier to make two separate new sections that have to do with living in an RV and then allowing RVs as employee housing on commercial properties. And that's what the new 153.175 and 153.176 are. The exemption, the yellow under the exemption, the C, was moved from, it was in another section of our code. Because
152.
It was 153.201D, which I made a note here as to what that was, which was it fit better under exemptions. Let me just say that. Okay, I'll leave it at that. And then 153.175 changes the amount of time you can live in an RV. I put 3 years in here. What we discussed at the February 22nd meeting was maybe it should be 2 years, maybe it should be tied to a building permit. I mean, there were, so I think this is, you know, a number we can work on. I mean, if we don't like 3 years, then we can certainly change that. Maybe it should be 2 years with an extension of a year allowed, because it's sort of open-ended here as to how long you might be able to get an extension for. So that would be another way to handle it. And then 153.176.176 is new. And this is the allowance to have a recreational vehicle for employee housing on commercial and institutional property. And the idea is that RVs are temporary. I mean, they're vehicles. And, you know, the hope is that, you know, you have something because you need it for a seasonal employee. At some point, you try to figure out how you build something that's more permanent. But this allows RVs to be used with a temporary use permit on commercial property. That's what this is laid out here. And then the last several pages are the code that we currently have for RV parks. And there are several changes here in it was mostly talking about campgrounds, so we added the campgrounds and RV parks. We clarified originally it was 30 units were allowed, and there was a mistake in the code where it's under 153.430B, it said does not count toward the 20. So we changed that to say 30, which is what we'd said was how many units were allowed in the RV park. And then we deleted, we cleaned up a couple of typos. Space and not spaces. It was sites and not sites. You'll see it throughout the thing. Sewage was spelled wrong, so we cleaned that up. And then we took out the limit on the duration of stay. So that was the main intent of this, was to remove that. We took out the fact that you don't have to have a landline, you just have to have a phone number. So, so it was cleaning up. As long as we were looking at this, we sort of cleaned things up a little bit. So that's the gist of it.
Thank you, Nancy. Okay, I entertain a motion. I will make a motion. I will make a motion that we leave the public meeting and go in the regular meeting and go into public hearing for the RV ordinance draft.
Second.
Nancy seconded. Can I have a vote?
Colleen, yes. Nancy, yes.
Okay. Elena, yes.
Okay, Tina, I, and we're ready to go. So I will open up to the public for if there's any questions from the public, please. We'll start with that. The questions being on this ordinance, and then any statements can be made thereafter. Is that you, Shelley?
Yes. I have a question. If you're doing this on commercial for RVs, for employee housing, correct? Do they have to remove all of them after the year's over? Or can they leave them on the property? Is that something we addressed?
I think there is no removal requirement in this code.
Thank you. Does that answer your question?
Do you think we should have one, though? Should they leave it all year? Or should they be removed every year?
Is that a comment or is that a question?
That's a question. Is it something that we should address? Are they going to leave them every year or are they going to remove them every year? These are RVs, not, a little shed or something like this.
May I hop in there to answer that? The reality is that you can store an RV that you're not living in on any property in Boulder. And so we would be changing this and restricting commercial properties in a way that we don't restrict any other properties if we were to include a removal requirement. But you're free right now to pull your RV, your trailer, or your motorhome or whatever up next to your house and park it all year while you're not using it. It seems maybe that it would be a little odd to have a removal requirement for the commercial uses, given that nobody else would be subject to that. I'm not saying you couldn't do it, but it just seems a bit odd. I think that's why there is not a removal requirement in there, though, to directly address the question, is because RVs can be in storage anywhere in town at this point in time.
So I can have 10 RVs on my property and nobody would be upset with me?
No, our code doesn't allow that. I think it's a maximum of 2 somewhere in the code. I read that, unless you're an RV park.
Nancy is correct. There is a limit. I think it's in 201. And the rest of 201 needs some work, but it doesn't get that work right now because we're just making these changes that Nancy has explained. But no, you can't have 10. I can't say whether somebody would be upset with you or not, whether you have one or 100. But the code, and I think it's up in section 201, limits you to the presence of two. So you could park a motorhome and a trailer next to your house right now. And again, that gets back to, you know, do you want to treat commercial properties differently than other properties?
Any other questions?
Judy Drain has her hand up. You don't have to answer now. I'm just telling you, oh, well, she put it down.
Okay, so is there a time limit, or have we decided that it's going to go, say, through November? You know, I see if we don't put some kind of a time limit on there, or a season, time of season, that this can be abused and used for staying all year round where it's employee housing only.
Okay, that's a comment. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Should we move into the comments? Yeah.
That's,
well,
it's a comment.
You're starting with a question and making a comment, in my opinion. But
I have a question.
Okay, well, let's just do questions then. Your questions, you can, yes, and then maybe you can do your comments thereafter.
Mark Nelson. So along with what she was saying, my question was, so I'm a little confused too about some of these issues on this, especially the temporary employee housing. Is there a limit to how many RVs a business can have on their property? Because I didn't see one listed here. And I think Nancy said that she saw somewhere where there's a limit of two, because I didn't see that anywhere.
I think there's a limit of two. It's in section 201, and yeah. This is on private property.
Yeah.
But there isn't an explicit limit stated in here, and little bit of that was being
no, no, yeah, you can. The questions and answers can happen.
That's the public hearing.
Okay. The hearing and the comment. We don't comment. We can answer questions.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think any of the commercial property we have in Boulder could accommodate more than one, maybe two. Just the nature of it. So this,
we don't have that right now.
Okay. You know, if someone were to,
so that's a question. I'll just want to think about that. Mike.
If I may hop in, I think Nancy's answer was the start, but the background is that you can't have employee housing without a conditional use permit. And so the Planning Commission will have the ability to limit the numbers in any way that they choose to through the conditional use permit for employee housing. In that sense, it's the same as if you were to build apartments for your employees or single family homes for your employees. The Planning Commission has to use the Commercial Development Standards checklist and the standards there, which require for things to be compatible. You guys went over that standard on the gravel pit tonight. And so that, at the moment, the answer is that that's the limitation, is the Planning Commission's discretion to keep things compatible. Obviously, that could be
talked about and changed.
That could be talked about and changed, but that's the situation right now, is that it's going to be the function of a conditional use permit from the Planning Commission.
Actually, that's not truly the way this code is being presented, is the temporary use permit.
The temporary, right. The temporary ones are limited to 120 days then.
No, we took that out. That's not
you
the
took
case.
That out. Okay. Okay. So you guys changed that, but sure. So the answer then, I guess, is for the temporary ones, it's up to the temporary use permit issued by the ZA.
Another question. So then, the way it's written as employee housing, does that mean that, and since there's no limitations listed, does that mean an employee could potentially live in the RV all year round, make it a permanent situation?
They potentially could, yes, if someone wants to live in an RV in the winter.
Okay, so then it becomes instead of temporary.
But they have to be, the limitation is they have to be an employee of the business.
Right, so that's the only limitation. Okay. I'll take that question, and then I have one more question on this one issue, and that was that on some of these commercial properties we have in town, some of their additions they have made to their commercial business have been made under a conditional use permits to require extra parking, and now if those employee housing cuts into the parking that was approved in a conditional use permit, would that be allowed, or would they have to redo the conditional use permit to comply with the less parking that was required?
So I think it's a good question. I think when we talked about this during our workshop, mm-hmm. I think there were several comments, and Daryl, you made some of them about the business, wants to stay in business and, is going to have to figure out how to juggle having customers versus employees. Right. And so rather than being very prescriptive in writing this and saying they have to have so many parking places, we are trying to provide housing, and and the businesses have asked for us to try to provide housing. So I think it's going to be up in terms of maintaining the site and providing parking for their employees. It's going to be up to the business. At least that's the way I've been thinking about it.
My question was, if that's in contradiction to the condition use permit,
Aaron, maybe you can tell me, but I don't know if any of our businesses have conditional use permits. That's sort of the thing.
Well, yes,
about
we do
the
have
commercial to. Before 2021.
Oh, exactly. In the pre-state.
Right. Uh-huh.
You were at that meeting too, and Dave talked to us about the fact as far as what it takes to. On his property, used as an example, is it's not affordable to keep those RVs up and having people in it because it would cost them money. The thing that people don't understand is out here, if you look at any of the, and I mentioned this, if you look at any of the RV parks, they're all shut down for the winter time. Trying to keep water, electricity to those trailers is not feasible for them. Their employees, generally, their seasonal employees, there aren't any seasonal employees here in town right now. They are just now coming back into town. So you have to really know the businesses and what is happening in the businesses. And that's something that we talked about too, is the fact that it's not feasible for them to keep those trailers open for those employees.
What I'm saying is that an employee doesn't necessarily have to be a seasonal employee. So that's that's why I asked that question about, not because of seasonal employees.
I'm just kind of giving you a reference because
right.
As far as how Dave explained why that probably wouldn't happen.
I was thinking more like, and I hate to, use Hilton Halls for example, but when they put in the food truck and some of these other uses, they got conditional uses to do that based on having enough parking, right? And if employee housing takes up some of that parking, then they're not, their conditional use permit is not valid anymore. So you need to think about, now I'm going into commentary, and I want to stay in the question territory, so I'll comment on that, but can I ask another question this, and I'd be glad to anybody else on Zoom wants to speak, but my other question was on amend 153.117 table of uses as follows: the first row, accessory dwelling unit commercial, add potentially compatible. And I don't ever remember talking about potentially compatible. I don't know what the definition of that or what it means. And it seems like when you say that without it being clearly defined, it becomes very subjective as what potentially compatible would be.
Can I hop in there?
Go ahead, Lee.
It's in our code.
Yeah, the PC
is used for those uses that require a conditional use permit. And so their compatibility is determined in the issuance of that permit. And so wherever you see PC on there, a conditional use permit is required. And that's the reality. There, we could have called them conditional uses, but there's the term condition gets used in all sorts of different ways in the code. And it just seemed more clear to me to come up with something different that indicated when you needed a conditional use permit. So at this point in time, it says PC. And so for any type of employee housing other than the temporary, you have to get a conditional use permit. And at that time, to loop back to the question that Mark also raised about parking, the Planning Commission is pretty much required by the commercial development standards to add parking if they make a change in a conditional use that adds a parking requirement. So I think that there is a clear answer to that, which is in the, it doesn't apply to the temporary ones the way this has been set up right now, and there's going to have to be a conversation about that. But for the other employee housing that is year-round, the standards would require the Planning Commission to adjust or adapt if the parking requirement increases.
Okay, I think you answered my question on that. So I don't want to, I'll want to comment that in my comments, but that was just a question I had on that. I think the other things I have here would come under comment. So somebody else on.
There's no, there isn't anybody else.
Did anybody else to ask questions? Anybody else on?
I want to go back to what Judy and I were saying. Why, that's a question, why don't we have a statement in our, let me say it right, ordinance that requires them, the employee housing, to take their vehicles off so it doesn't look like an RV thing, or if they break down or they can't move it or afford to move it, that it just sits there. Why don't we have a statement in there that it has to be moved every year?
Because we don't require it for anybody.
Yeah, Lee addressed right. that earlier.
But this is employee housing. I'm only talking employee. We're just trying to address that. Any conditional one, like for my place and so on, mine could not be working and I can keep it on my property. That's fine. And they can too, up to two. Correct? So why don't we have a statement, anything over two, they've got to have it moved every year? Why isn't that statement in there?
They can't have over two because it becomes an RV park. And then they'd have to go through a conditional use permit.
I think that falls under question anyway. I mean, that's not a question about the existing content. That's a comment on the existing content.
Yeah. Katie, do you have a question?
I don't have a question, but I wanted to chip in here.
Excuse me. Okay. If there are no questions, we usually let questions happen and then comments. So if there are no more questions, we're ready to take comments. Is there anyone who has an actual question about what's on this ordinance proposal draft? Do you see anybody, Jess?
No.
Okay. All right. We're going to start with comments with Katie. Go ahead, Katie.
Thank you. I stated in a previous meeting that I did not feel good about RVs as permanent housing, but I do understand that we need to provide for a certain amount of people here in our population. But I feel as permanent housing, RVs need further limitations. Anyway, You are diversifying. You are saying that there's commercial properties, there's properties with a conditional use permit, there is the other properties. And I feel like all of these properties should get treated absolutely equally. And I also don't quite understand why we do distinguish in between RVs as a living space for a regular person and its use as an employee housing. If somebody lives there, isn't that all the same? I mean, if somebody has a job somewhere else, does that matter? Do they have to have a job for somebody? I'm not understanding why there should be a difference there. You did talk about a 3-year limit for properties and people who are under construction, and having gone through construction more than once in this town. I do understand that, but I do feel that a 1-year limit is just fine with an option to extend, and to extend probably for more than one time. Just to give people the option to finish their construction project, but also to kind of give them encouragement to work on their construction project and not just get started on something and then get sidetracked. The option to tie the a permit for this to the building permit seems like a smart move, but as Boulder does not really issue any building permits, it's really up to the county to do that. And I think if we tie it to building permit, we give this away from us, and the county doesn't really care about what we do or what we not do. So I feel like it needs to not get tied to the building permit. It needs to stay within the town of Boulder, and kind of it needs to be like a 12-month permit, which can be extended at that point, or they can all run out December 31st, and then they can get extended for another year if you can show a degree of improvements on your construction site. I think that would just be a better and a more straightforward way to go about this, and to prevent the mushrooming of the RV living spaces in this town. Then if it would get decided that they do get treated as permanent housing, I wonder, what does that require? If it's permanent housing, does it require a building permit? Does it require septic? Does it require power, water, compliance with the International Building Code, and basically oversight and approval of the Garfield County Building Inspector? Thank you. Thank you for your time, and thank you for listening.
Thanks, Katie. Okay, Mark, you want to go next since you're right there?
Oh, sure. So I guess fundamentally what I think about this, I just think it's not refined enough to go to the town board. I think there's a bunch of things that need to be refined to make it a usable document, and that some of these terms that are undefined need to be cleaned up. I kind of got an answer on potentially compatible, but I still have no idea what that means. I guess that comes under a conditional use permit, you know, but conditional use permit is not going to be used in this employee temporary housing, right? Is that my understanding? So it's not there. That's just not there. So it needs to be more clearly defined, because you're not going to be able to refine it with conditional use permit, because you're not going to issue a conditional use permit. It's going to be a temporary permit. Maybe in a temporary permit, you can put some stipulations, change the temporary. But the way it stands, I just don't think it's refined enough to go to the town board. And then over on 153.176, this thing about the 3 years, I just think that's quite a jump from the 1 year we had in there. And I think, and like Katie made a good point there, that when you just let somebody start at 3 years, then, you know, I don't think you get much of an incentive
for them to move along as quickly as they could if you make it year to year and show some evidence, like you said, in construction being completed. But that's also open-ended. So the three-year thing that you did, nobody has to do anything to go 3 years. That's, you start there. And then after that, it seems open-ended because it doesn't, it says that you can apply for an extension, but it doesn't say how many extensions or so it's very vague and open-ended. I don't like that open-ended. That bothers me. And then on the substantial progress, I think that needs to be refined somehow because how are you going to determine that? Are you going to have to, somebody comes and says, I'm making substantial progress, and then you're going to ask them what? Like, you know, how do you determine that? And then it becomes a subjective issue with you guys. And I just think that needs to be more refined to make it equitable and fair and easier to understand and easier for the person that's doing it to understand that they know that this is what they need to accomplish. Right. And I'm not against an extension, but I think there needs to be some kind of, motivation to deal with this. And like Katie says, I've seen a lot of this going around here, and I know how hard it is to do this in Boulder, but, if we're trying to go forward, we want to refine some of these things and make them a little bit better than they were. And if we've made mistakes in the past, they shouldn't be perpetuated. So, just saying, if you're trying to clean things up, and that, I think maybe this should have come maybe after the subdivision issue, because it seems like that's going to be define a lot of other things, including this. And then down there, on the such RVs must be connected to reasonable access to culinary water, on site wastewater, and so on. I looked over and blank, and I thought, and what? And also, where's power? I mean, you gotta have power, you gotta have a livable space of some kind. Now, an RV runs off of batteries, which is recharged by a car battery. Well, it's gonna be part of it. It doesn't have a power source. And I think, if they have solar or something, that would be adequate. But you can't even run a furnace in an RV. And if you got batteries, you have to have somebody to charge those batteries. And if somebody then hooks up a generator, I don't think anybody's going to like that. Somebody has to run a generator maybe for a long period of time. And if they, if they put in solar, it would be a great idea to make it come back. But I think you have to put power in there of some kind. You have to have power in there of some kind because you don't have a living unit. Right? You've got batteries to run it, but those batteries have to be charged somewhere. You're not going to be able to car all the time. So I think that's an open look at that. And so I think that needs to be addressed. And the definition of what an employee was at least 1,000 hours. I thought that was interesting, but I'm sure I came to 1,000 hours, but that's not that. What I'm more concerned about is if an employee doesn't have to be a seasonal employee for me. They can have other employees, like maintenance, custodial, that sort of thing. And if somebody lives in that RV, it's highly unlikely, but that already clearly defines so people know that seasonal employees, right? And other employers, like long-term employees, should probably see more long-term housing. That's not RV or anything. Then you've got the whole problem with the permanent housing thing. And then just one more thing is on the housing for institutional property, that includes Boulder Township, state school districts. I guess the more I think about it, I don't like that. I don't think that institutional property, I'm not sure what that is beyond, the Boulder Town state agencies. They can do whatever they want. So it's really Boulder Town school districts. I don't really want to see Boulder Town get in the rental business. Now, if they needed to get somebody, in a very temporary way in an RV trailer for some project or something, that's one thing. But as like employee housing, I don't know if that's such a great idea. And we do, And then On the school district thing, I know this is a sensitive issue. I realize it's being treated as temporary, but I would like to see, you know, Ray's going to have an RV park up there, so there's going to be some other options for, you know, that seasonal housing for teachers and things. I mean, if they think they want to live in an RV in the wintertime, that's when teaching is. But I would like, what I'd like to see rather than that, and is maybe approach the school board providing a stipend for teachers. And then you get, if they would come up with a stipend, then that would help the teachers, you know, more financially find housing if needed. And also, you know, it would be for more than, you know, if they put in a pad there for one teacher, what about the other teachers? You know, and if it's just a temporary thing, maybe we have to look for a more permanent solution there. And instead of going there, because I looked at that lot, and I'm like, I don't think there's room for a pad and a trailer and a car to go with that.
I think, you know, just make sure that it stays on topic of this. Those are like ideas for something else. So just make sure that the comment is relevant to this right here.
I think I am, all right. So it's
giving out ideas
on
what
to be allowed on. In Boulder Town School District, isn't that part of what we're talking about?
I just meant giving ideas of what else you could do.
Okay.
So just making sure that the comments are relevant to this exact, you're giving out ideas of what else could happen.
I'm providing a suggestion that is maybe better than the one that's been suggested here. I think that's perfectly okay in my comments.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I've had. Basically, the thing is, is I don't think this is ready to go to the board, but you can talk it over and do two things.
Thank you. Jen.
Hey, Tina.
Yes.
Real quick first, do we have a, did we set a time? Are we doing a time limit on any of the comments? I appreciate people's comments, but those last two were pretty long and we still got a lot to do tonight.
Well, actually I did not set one, but let's try.
Okay. Maybe we can try to keep them a little quicker.
I'm on everyone now, but you can do more.
No.
I don't think it'll be an issue for me anyway.
Okay.
Can I go?
Yeah.
Great. All right. I agree that a 3-year start for a temporary permit for someone building a permanent dwelling is a bit lengthy. I think it should be 1 year with the option to extend maybe twice. I don't think there should be indefinite extensions. Let's see. Employee housing for the RVs. I wondered if it could be attached possibly to the business being open, but then going along with businesses that are open year round gets a little fuzzy, but or define what our season is, because we kind of have a set season based on weather. Must the business be open when people are occupying that RV? That's another question. I guess I did have questions. Anyway, the school thing, I haven't commented on it prior to this. I hadn't really formulated my thoughts. I know that we're doing kind of aiming it for a specific reason, but in the bigger picture for the future, I wonder if we would be allowing kind of a cop out if we're trying to provide housing for a teacher. Maybe we'd like to provide housing for a teacher. And so I wonder if allowing the RV will allow the easiest, cheapest solution to providing housing for a teacher in a season when it's not good to live in an RV. So that, I think that is my comments. Those are my comments.
Thanks, Jen. Anyone else? Who is the Judy? Yeah, Judy, sorry. Go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, the only thing, I agree with the others. I believe that 1 year is good with two extensions of a year, and mainly because watching what we have seen and things getting dropped, it makes it to where people are responsible for what they're doing and it moves them forward. We haven't seen a whole lot of that yet, but I just think it's smart to put a defined time on there that's shorter so that we can keep track of these things. And then if they need an extension or two, to me, that's fine. But at least we know how things are moving along. And it's an incentive for them to keep them moving along, even if it's a small thing. As long as they're moving forward, And we can see that and keep up with it. I'm good with that, but I really believe that a year is plenty with a couple of extensions. So that's all I have. Thank you. You guys are doing a good job.
Great. Thank you, Judy. Okay, is there any other comments? Okay. All right, I would like to make a motion to close the public hearing and move to the regular meeting. Can I have a second? Nancy seconds. Can I have a vote?
Nancy, aye.
Colleen, aye.
Gerald, aye.
Elena, aye.
Yeah, aye. Thanks, Elena. Okay, it is now 9:11. Does anybody need a break real quick? No? Okay. I'm going to go another half an hour and then I might need a break. Okay. Let's see. I had a thought here, which I need to get back to me. So moving on forward with the Planning Commission, my thought was, if I can find it, was should we address any issues that we had in this ordinance before we actually make any kind of motions to move forward?
I have a couple of things I wanted to say.
Okay.
I agree. I'm going to go back to 153-176. I agree, like Mark said, basically number three, the primary occupant of the RV shall be a local worker employed in Boulder. I'm not so sure of that I like or expected to be employed for at least 1,000 hours per year in Garfield County. I think that opens it up for people to come here. People love to live in Boulder. They'll work someplace else if they have to. And I really think that we're trying to get this for Boulder. So I would like to see that last part of that sentence gone. I mean, and that's just my, what I'm thinking kind of, because it would incentivize people, you know, we're trying to help people here in Boulder and the businesses. So I wasn't too sure about that.
Could you repeat that, where that sentence is again?
Yeah, so it's 153. It's on page four of Nancy's
In the temporary for employee housing.
A3. I also believe
that whole sentence.
I would like to see the sentence read, the primary occupant of the RV shall be a local worker employed in Boulder. That's what I'd like to see this. And that's my comment. And I also believe that a temporary use permit for these should be 1 year. I don't think anybody's had a problem. I see houses being built all the time. I think the 1 year has been reasonable for anybody that's been building here in town. And if they want to extend that another year, either one or two times, maybe even, you know, as far as that goes. So I think that there's a lot to be said about that. And I guess I hear what Mark is saying on just a couple of these. When we were talking about commercial uses being on or using this as temporary housing, I already kind of stated my comment as far as what Dave said about, I don't think that businesses should have to move those RVs off their commercial properties. And I don't necessarily know that it will affect the parking in any of them. And I actually, because Boulder is the way that it is, you can look at all these businesses right now, see what they are doing, see what they're capable of doing. And Dave and Susan were talking a lot about why, you know, you can shut that RV down, cover it up, whatever, but the employees are probably not going to be here because the whole town shuts down. And you can see RV parks all over Garfield County. The RV parks themselves are shut down because water freezes. And then Nancy, I think on this one too, Mark commented on this on two, such RVs must be connected to or have reasonable access to culinary water, on-site disposal, and I think that should be power, period. I think that you might have just left that word out, power. That was all. And
hey, guys.
Yeah.
It's Michael Wynn.
I didn't mean to cut you off there, but if I may, I came prepared to offer a few remarks on this, but I'm beginning to wonder if I ought to offer those in writing so that I don't jam this up any further or subtly change the direction here. What would you guys prefer as far as the legal review?
Can you give a summary now and then also write them?
Sure, yeah, I'll jam through this. On page 4 under subsection 153 and 176, where we're discussing those who are seeking housing based on employment, that's going to be subject to an equal protection challenge. It's going to be set at a rational reasoning scrutiny level, which means as long as you can come up with some rational basis as to why you're discriminating against those who are employed versus those who are not, it's going to be fine. But to me, it just smacks of bad form. In the recitals, you might want to consider adding something to in regards to the, are we addressing homelessness? Are we addressing home security? Do you want to add something in regards to what we're trying to accomplish as far as maybe just not affordable housing for those who are residents or those who want to work in Boulder, but maybe we're trying to solve a larger issue as well. I'm kind of worried about on pages 5 through 6 under Town Code 153, 430. We need to address EMS, fire, public safety, and sanitation. This is just kind of more of a suggestion, but maybe we need to limit the number of individuals per RV. And then, you know, just listening through this whole thing, I want to tell you, on the Substantial Progress Initiative, that's incentivized through the tax rate. You're going to be assessed a higher tax penalty for a home that's under construction. So really, the incentive to finish that up as quick as possible and achieve the primary residency rate is built into the tax code. And then I wonder, based on what you guys are discussing here about the zoning, I know it's a conditional use permit, but are we in reality changing commercial to residential under some sort of spot zoning ordinance? I didn't have a chance to look at that. I didn't think of it until now, but these are just some of my high-level observations. I thought maybe this was in a substantial form or a final proposed form for public comment. Otherwise, I can get back to you on all this, or we can take it under advisement, however you prefer.
I just wanted to, and Michael, this may not directly address what you just brought up, but I think some of the other comments that have been made, when we talk about employee housing, a commercial business putting an RV on their property for their employee, I mean, and we may even want to refine, you said employees in Boulder, Colleen, we may actually say employees employed by that commercial business in Boulder.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about Hills and Hollows renting to someone who works at Boulder Mountain Lodge. At least that's not the way I had construed this. I mean, that we are trying to help commercial businesses keep their employees in whatever season. I mean, one of the challenges is the seasons are different. I mean, there are businesses that are open year round in Boulder. There are some that are seasonal, and those seasons, the school is a different season than what the tourist season is. So, you know, if we.
So the problem is you're given preference to those who are employed. You know, I guess your definition would be a local worker employed or expected to be employed for 1,000 hours in Garfield County, as opposed to those who aren't. I mean, is that
right?
And as long as you have a rational reason,
if I can hop in here,
you can escape the Equal Protection Scrutiny review on that. But ultimately, it just gives preference to those who are employed.
Employee housing, accessory employee housing is an extremely common provision in zoning ordinances everywhere. And
it is.
I think you have to remember.
It is, that, but is that what you want to say? Is what I'm asking you.
Yeah. Well, it's a reasonable question, but the word accessory, which hasn't really come up here, is a key term of art here. If it's accessory, by definition, that employee is an employee of the business there, right? Because to be an accessory use, you have to be related to the principal use. So we're back to that very fundamental zoning idea of principal and accessory uses. So the whole 1,000-hour thing did not come from this direction, I guarantee you. Basically, the implication, the expectation, whatever you want to say, is that you can only provide housing for somebody who's working for you on your premises. That's the only way it counts as being accessory.
But it doesn't make that exception in the code. If you read through there, it doesn't tie it to the ownership of the business and the occupant of the property itself.
I would just say that that's covered by the definition of accessory. There's no reason not to make it more explicit. I don't see that as being difficult to do, but.
So really, is this ordinance trying to solve the issue of housing for employees?
Yes.
As opposed to those who are homeless?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're given housing preference to employees or those who work for a local employer versus those who are suffering for unsecured housing.
Well, to say it that we're giving preference just isn't the case.
It's an equal protection argument is what it is. And that's what I'm advising on, is that you can do it.
Well, yeah, a lot of people do.
But is it really what you want to say?
Yes.
No, I think that's a good question. And I think it is. This is not about other ways of addressing the town's housing problems. This is one specific tool in the box.
Sure. Okay.
And those objectives are sort of listed at the top in the whereas statements.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I see those in the recitals. Like I said, I think you ought to probably include a more fundamental approach to, you know, you're wanting to provide housing for prospective residents, local business, teachers. I mean, you're given a list of those who you prefer as opposed to those you don't. I'm just telling you, it reads us versus them.
Well, this is actually changing.
And if that's the way you want it, I'm just offering my opinion on this matter. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Can we move forward with the Planning Commission meeting?
Does anybody else have comments on this? Of, you know, 1 year, that's been suggested by several, going back to it being in section 153.175, keeping it at 1 year,
yeah,
with an option for two renewals of a year, could make that. So that's a question, I guess, what commissioners are sort of comfortable with or prefer.
I do have a thought on the length. time. I do, before I get to that, I just wanted to put note on the construction. So was it 153.175 using an RE during construction? It currently says it's required to be connected to water and sewer. I would like it to change to be more like what it says in 176, where it says it must be connected to or have reasonable access to preliminary water on site wastewater disposal. Because somebody could have, like the situation I live in. I live in an RV that has just power to it. The shop sink, the kitchen, the toilet, all that is inside the dwelling and is finished. So, yeah, and it makes it a lot easier to deal with that and live in the winter. So I think that having more flexibility there is wise. And then as far as the 3 years, I get it. People are afraid of someone taking 10 years to finish a home. But Michael mentioned that, you know, that you've got a tax incentive to finish a home. I'm still a fan, actually, of tying it to your building permit. If you dilly-dally in a building permit, you're going to be paying a couple thousand bucks to resurrect that thing. So it keeps your feet to the fire. And honestly speaking, so going from you showing up, if you landing in Boulder, getting your ducks in a row, getting your permit, getting your foundation dug, getting the concrete poured, assuming that the weather is conducive to that, that alone could chill 4 or 5 months. And then you're telling me you're supposed to get to your foreway and then you get drywall in and insulated and everything dried in. And then on top of that, have all your finish work in the remaining 8 months in Boulder, Utah. I don't think that's realistic for anyone who's, people doing this are doing owner building. This is a very important stopgap for some people, incredibly important. So I don't know. I think 1 year, it's really, really optimistic cases.
So would 2 years be a compromise there?
Yes.
I
think it should be tied to a permit too. I think the thing is too is, I think that if somebody wants to live in their RV, I mean, it needs to be tied to the fact that they're building a house. And I liked that idea when it was proposed, basically. Because otherwise, you're just living on your property in an RV and you don't have any incentive even to get a building permit. Not really.
It really isn't pleasant living in an RV. I don't know anyone who would want to do it long term.
Well,
there's a lot of difficulty. And especially if you're running water in gray water and black water, I don't think you're fighting freezing. They are not constructed to the winter. So it is a temporary stopgap. I think a lot of the fears will not materialize.
Elena, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I feel really strongly that it needs to be more than 1 year. I'm perfectly fine with three. That would be my preference. If two feels like a better compromise for people with a potential extension, I could be fine with that too. But I just really don't think that a year is long enough. And if the person finishes before 3 years, great. They're going to move into their house, because why would you live in your RV when you could live in your finished home? I agree. There are just other built-in incentives when you're building a house to finish. There are tax incentives. There's the incentive of wanting to be done. And especially if you're doing owner builder and get back to whatever other job makes you money or whatever like that. I mean, there's plenty of incentive to finish your home. And there are still going to be people who take a long time, and there are still going to be people who take a really short period of time. But I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we're doing this because to address a population of people that doesn't have housing in Boulder. And the people in my experience, as a generalization, but the people in my experience that are finishing their houses in a year are the people who are, yeah, like paying the construction company or just sold another house for a lot of money. They're not the population necessarily that we're trying to address with this. And I think giving people more time is important if we're trying to address the goal that we say we are. Other comments I have. Daryl, if you wouldn't mind turning your microphone volume up. I'm straining to hear you a little bit. If you could either go closer to the mic or turn it up, that would be great for me. And then Nancy, I wanted to ask you, I wrote this down way earlier during public comment, just a clarification question. I think you had said that for the, so it's temporary use now. And then I think you said that we got rid of the 120 day thing. Is that correct?
That's correct. On these.
Okay. Because it still says it somewhere in here. Let me find it. Yeah, the top of page 3. Am I reading that incorrectly? Top of page 3A.
So those are, it's a list of allowed temporary uses. And C is an addition that says, it can be, according to the provisions in 153.175 and 153.176, which are different than, it's like A or B or C.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Thank you. That was my hang up. Thanks.
Right. It's not A and B and C.
Yeah. C makes it such that, like, if you're doing a building permit, look here. And if you're doing commercial use, look here. That makes sense. Thank you.
There is a change just while I was thinking about it in this same section of the building permit, how long you can live there. The last sentence, the town may extend the period of, and it should say temporary use, not conditional use. So that's a word that would have to change in there. But.
Is that on page 4?
That's on page 4. I think that paragraph, and I guess, you know, it's sort of, do we want 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, or building permit? There's sort of 4 options in there, I guess, need to try to come to agreement on if we're going to try to move this forward.
That's, and if I can just say something really fast, I think you're all getting so close to that, and kind of like what Elena said, and then bringing it home full circle of like, you're trying to put this ordinance in for people who need that help. And that's the thing, is that yes, there are definitely houses that can be built in a year, 2 years, even if you're doing it yourself. But having it, what if you're not done in 3 years? And, you know, and so that's, I think that when we look at a renewal and you're looking at tying it to the building permit, it's nice in that sense, because as long as, I mean, I wish it could say something along as long as you're making progress, and if it's substantial progress, what that looks like. But there are going to be people who are building their houses with their two hands. They don't have the ability to hire anyone, and how, like, you don't want to stop people from doing that. You want to be able to encourage that, but then how do we safely do that and making sure? And so yes, having a 2 year, yes, having renewal. And if that's tied to, you know, the building permit or what that looks like, but only giving someone 2 years and then what, it stops, then you have to leave the whole, your prop. Like, what if it means you have to move at the end of the day? Like, well, you've been building a house.
You can get an extension. And I would say, you know, having put an addition on a house, I mean, the substantial progress to me would be, you know, Jared comes out and has to inspect this and this and this. And, you know, if you can show whoever is going to renew your temporary use permit, which is probably the zoning administrator, that here's the inspection on the building permit, you know, we are making progress on this.
Yeah.
That to me would be substantial progress. I mean, that, you know, you've checked it off. It's been 3 months before the drywall's done or whatever.
This is a question for anyone on the commission who has built a house, since I have not. When Jared comes out, is there cost associated with bringing him there, I assume?
No, you pay for the building permit, and then you don't pay anything for his inspections.
There,
There's a limited time.
There might be costs. So if you bring Jared out, you're not prepared. Then he has the option to charge you money for bringing him out twice when you should have been ready for one inspection. But
okay.
There's no cost.
And it is all online, which I don't know. All the building permits are online now in Garfield County. You know, the inspection, I mean, you have to log in I don't know if you, the zoning administrator, can get access to the, because that would be one way to check.
Yes.
And see.
You wouldn't be able to just like log into their server, but it could be a very fast phone call to be like, hey, where's Nancy on her building permit?
Yeah. It just seems like there's so little risk to letting people do it for longer, and there's more work associated for everyone in doing it the other way. The applicant has more to do. Jared's coming out more. Aaron and Jess and people working for the town who, you know, we pay them for all their hours. It's all time on the town's books, and they're already busy and have a lot on their plates. It just seems unnecessary to me.
Yeah, that's right, Elena. Part of the rationale for doing 3 years was to eliminate some bureaucracy. That, you know, if it was 1 year and then you have to reapply and then you have to reapply again.
And you will have to do that with your building permits anyway.
Yeah. And but you just, I don't know. I guess I just can't really be convinced that a few people around town living in their RVs while they're building their house for an extra year is really any skin off anyone's back. I think that whole notion is honestly a little bit ridiculous.
Thank you. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
So I did have a comment. I had one more that I was looking at. On 153.175, you have temporary use of RV or mobile home for living purposes during period of construction. I'm just wondering about why, if this is a mobile home, because you were talking to me about, you know, the difference between an RV and a mobile home. And if you pull a mobile home onto your property, like a mobile home is like, that's what I live in basically. And you have to have that set, to have it set, and it has to be tied down to the property. So I don't know that you want to leave mobile home
there. I saw that calling.
And I hop in there?
Yes, please, go ahead.
From the
I had taken this thing has gone through multiple drafts by multiple people without full coordination. I took the word mobile home entirely out of all the pieces because there are manufactured homes and there are RVs. Mobile homes are older units that don't comply with any code. And there's nothing that, it doesn't make any sense at all to leave that term in there and raise the possibility that somebody drags a, let's see, it would almost have to be pre-80s, a 1976 Skyline mobile home that meets no codes in. That's worse than an RV. So the word mobile home should come out of there entirely in any application. And I thought that I had taken it out, but I didn't do the final draft of this. So yeah, but that word needs to come out wherever it appears.
Do you ever mean, like, did it mean motorhome? Is there a difference between a motorhome and an RV, or motorhome also under RV?
Mobile homes are completely specifically defined by the absence of code thing. And the RVs meet an RV code. Manufactured homes meet the HUD manufactured home code. The only way you're going to get a true mobile home, other than I think there are a couple hanging around Boulder, is if somebody drags in an old pre-1983, I think it is, manufactured home from somewhere else. They don't meet codes, and there's just no reason to provide a possibility for them to be there. So it doesn't affect true RVs as they're defined in the code, and it doesn't affect true manufactured homes as they're defined. There's just this odd category out of pretty much ancient semi-mobile structures. And we don't need to add any of those in Boulder.
So there are three places in that we would delete mobile home in the title, and then
on page four,
yeah,
the second line and
yeah,
the third line.
Yeah.
It was a residue of just having been part of the previous section that was on conditional
right,
use.
Right, yes. I don't think anybody gave it any thought until just now. Although I, like I said, I took it out in the version of this that I prepared that apparently fell by the side. And so it just needs to come out of this version.
And I have one other correction, which is for some reason, mine doesn't print out correctly page-wise, but it's under the additional standards, backgrounds, and that. And it is F2. I believe that the designating parking space, one designated parking space instead of space is probably read.
One designated parking space. You're right. That's where the S came from.
Let's see. And so the other thought that I had, and I've got it marked, water sewage. Let's see. It's also, I believe, under RV parks, towards the very bottom, three, water and sewage, that there, it says, define the code in the state current. I think that there needs to be more specific fire, required by fire code, fire hydrants, state fire hydrants. That maybe ultimately it should have something that's current codes for, you know, state.
So that's a totally different topic than the RV changes we were trying to make. So
oh, okay.
I mean, this whole section is just our current code aside from the yellow highlights.
Right.
Okay, great. So, great. Okay. I guess
get into that.
I guess I was thinking that we're changing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could.
Okay. Well, I don't think there were all the other comments for me were already made. So. How do you? Is there anyone who wants to make a motion based on this ordinance?
And maybe this is the time we can take a recess to get a motion together, if you do have a motion that you want a minute to gather.
I'm still trying. That's a good idea, Jessica. On the 1, 2, 3 for building permit, because I think I've got notes on everything else, that including your suggestion, Carol, that the RV must be connected to or have reasonable access. Must be connected or have reasonable access to culinary water, on-site wastewater disposal, and power, rather than the way it's currently written. But I don't know if there's strong feelings.
If I can hop in here again, it seems to me that the potential changes have gotten to be fairly big, and I heard from Michael's comments that maybe we could make a helpful addition to the recitals to put this in its proper context, because I think he had a point that is a valid point. If you just look at this one piece of it, if the town's trying to do other things. So I think that the recitals can be improved as well. And I guess my suggestion is that since Nancy took over the moving this forward, I would send her the change to the recitals that occurs to me based on Michael's comments. And I think Nancy probably has other has all the other notes. And it's probably going to be more clear to everyone and better if we come up with a clean version with the changes, like the change you were just talking about the accessibility. I mean, you're just bringing the language back into that from the employee one. So it's easy to do, but by the time you make all these changes, you're not going to have a clear record of what got changed. If you make a motion tonight, I would suggest that Nancy put it together. I'll send her my idea about the recitals. And then at the next meeting, you have a clean draft and everybody can vote on it based on this hearing. You know, and there may be other things that occur to people as a basis of the comments or whatever that they could communicate to Nancy. But I think it's going to be very difficult to get a motion down on paper right now. And it would be easier for Nancy to continue to do the work that she's done and incorporate these changes and then bring a clean draft in 2 weeks and then send it on to town council at that moment. Otherwise, we're going to have to spend an hour sitting here doing the language.
So I was going to suggest that we consider this at our March 28th meeting.
Yeah.
Which I think if we indicate ahead of time that we intend to take action at that meeting.
So make it a special meeting? Mm-hmm.
Because the goal here was to try to get something done on RVs, move it forward, get it to town council, and potentially benefit some of our commercial businesses with the opportunity to think about how they might house employees. So rather than waiting till our next April meeting and then not having it go to town council, we will also have to do a public hearing and have a discussion on this. If we can do it at our March 28th meeting, then it could go to town council for their April meeting. Maybe.
It can, as long as, so it's easier to put out a public hearing notice and then take it back, because you won't have it approved by the 10-day mark. But if you are set to have it, then it's easier to be like, you guys went through the meeting and you're like, actually, we're still not ready. And then I can say public hearing canceled. But if we just say you're committed, no matter what, we're putting this on the agenda, I'll put out the public hearing. Hopefully you meet that and then we can always take it back.
You know, I have a comment too. I feel like we're expected to figure these things out and move them along. The Planning Commission is always being told, you've been working on this for the last 6 months. You've been working on this since October. Why haven't you figured this out? This right here is an example of why we take our time, and maybe it will take us a year to craft this ordinance. But when we have expectations that they're supposed, I just kind of hate that expectation when we're trying to listen to what people, their comments, and Nancy is, we've had three people crafting this document right here, and it's still, we still are having comments from everybody, and you know, we're expected to be pushing this forward. And I just kind of want to make that comment because, oh, you've had this for this many months and you should be moving this on. I just have a hard time with that because of a meeting like this and the expectation, maybe it's going to take us a year to get this done. And I kind of want to reiterate that because we did a lot of work on this tonight, you know, and there has been a lot of work put into it. And we still need another month, maybe. And so I just want to make that comment as far as why we feel compelled to get these things moving forward so quickly. I just wanted to make that comment. And I don't know if I'm the only one that feels that way. I feel like we do a lot of work. We're trying to get the public involved in this. And I mean, it's the same thing too. You know, we have our Michael, and I'm not making this as a, this was for temporary employee housing. It's not for homeless or anything. We're trying to solve a problem, and we're just, you know, I just wanted to make that comment.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So can I get a motion on what someone wants?
Before you, does anyone, like, you have accomplished so much tonight, and there's still this one question that Nancy's actually asked like four times, and there hasn't been an answer to. And I feel like this is going to hold you up next month if you don't answer this right now. It's the question of what Nancy keeps asking for years. Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? Is there a renewal? Or is it tied? I think that if you don't answer that tonight, you're going to be stuck next. Like,
I think it should be tied to the building permit.
That's my opinion as well.
Yeah, that's my opinion too. It should be tied to the building permit.
Well, how does it, so it's tied to the building permit. As long as they have a building permit, they can stay in an RV?
Yeah.
What
we're trying to accomplish is what we're being told is that people can't get their houses built in 3 years. Well, if they're not going to get their houses built at all if they don't have a building permit, we're just allowing them to live
on fair enough
property in RVs. It should, and that's why we're doing this, is so that they can live on their property in RVs as they're building their house, no matter how long it takes. It should be tied to a building permit. Okay. And that's another thing that we're trying to figure out, and why it takes us so long to do these things.
Okay. So we've had a lot of discussion. I think we need to get back to the fact that we need to make a motion moving forward. And so if this is the item that we want to try and resolve tonight, there needs to be a motion to on what, so that we can vote yay, nay, or whatever.
And why is there a reason why we have to have a motion, or can we just make a motion that we're going to move this document forward and continue to work on it? So that the motion is that we're going to move it forward and continue to work on it, because we haven't made any decisions still.
Well, I guess was that the item that came up was basically the 3 year issue. And so can we get some kind of agreement on that particular issue tonight before we, you know, set this aside to work on it more?
I'll make a motion that we tie this ordinance or I'm not prepared to make that motion.
Section 153.175.
Okay, why don't you do it, Nancy? Since
I can do it.
Okay, go ahead.
I make a motion to take 153.175 and change the time from 3 years to having it tied to the building permit.
Great.
Second.
I'll second that.
Pauline Thompson.
So then we discuss.
Right. So, okay. So changing 153.5, the time frame, 0.5 what? 0.175. Did you already get it down?
And change the time from 3 years to having it tied to a building permit.
Okay. Do I have, now we have the discussion.
I'm curious if Lee is still on, I'm just curious what his opinion is on this, if he's willing to share.
Lee,
you're muted.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Am I audible now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tying it to the building permit is how I wrote it in the first place. And I think that, there was a comment made much earlier in all of this about, well, the county issues building permits, not the city. But technically speaking, the building permits are issued by the county for the city, because the county can't issue permits within the city limits. So it is a city function. And the city has full access to what, you know, the county inspector does, and presumably the Aaron, as the zoning administrator, can
communicate with Jared as the building inspector and people understand what's going on. The way to deal with these things is to simply make a motion directing whoever is going to do the drafting, in this case, Nancy, to come up with a new draft that reflects this evening's discussion. I think everybody's expressed their opinion about the building permit now, and that's good. But the motion you need is to direct Nancy to bring you a draft reflecting what happened at the hearing. And I think I would include in that motion, since we want to be careful about the technicalities, that the March whatever meeting is, that, you know, that you're continuing this discussion until then, so that you can make a decision at that time. So I would say the motion ought to read something like, whoever move that the Planning Commission direct Nancy Tosta to to bring a new draft that reflects this evening's discussions, and that we will continue our discussion of this on March the whatevereth, and make a decision at that time. And that way we've covered the base of extending your thing. We don't have to worry. I mean, that's essentially calling a special meeting, but that's how I would word it. It's very difficult to get these things hammered out the right way just sitting here. And you need to direct your staff or whomever, and in this case, Nancy's basically functioning staff, to do the work. And then you take a look at it next time and say, hey, that's it. And, or that's not it, as the case may be, and go forward. But that's the type of motion you need, is just to direct that the work be done and continue this conversation on the whatever of the March.
But in terms of tying it to the building permit, you don't see any risk there that doesn't exist with a time frame, just to be clear.
I am much happier to tie it to the building permit, because
great,
as has been pointed out by people who've actually done this, and all, you have to have due diligence on the building permit. You know, I think Nancy said, pointed out, you have drywall inspections. You have the series of inspections when you're building a home, and you can take a look at the building and county building inspector's record of inspections and very quickly determine whether somebody is sticking with it. But basically, any time you pick is arbitrary, right? And tying it to the building permit is not arbitrary. There will be a moment when the building permit is completed and the county building inspector issues a certificate of occupancy. At that moment, the RV has to go away. Boom.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, cool. Well, then in that case, I mean, it seems like we might be able to kind of make those decisions tonight and then leave time in the later March meeting for other things. Because I'm fine with that, then, it being tied to the building permit. I wasn't sure if it would bring up any risks we weren't seeing, but it seems like it shouldn't. So, I mean, if we can all agree on that tonight, that would be cool, just because we've talked about this topic at a lot of meetings, and I think it's important to do that. But also, you know, the more we can tie up tonight, the better.
Yeah, I think we should vote on the motion.
Okay, so it's been moved by Colleen.
Daryl, and I seconded.
And Colleen seconded. Okay.
Can we repeat the motion?
Made a motion to take 153.175 and change the time from 3 years to having it tied to a building permit.
Great. Thank you.
Now we vote.
Okay, yes. It's been moved in second. Can I have a vote?
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Nancy Tosta, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Tina, aye. Elena, aye.
Okay, great. That is decided. Now, the motion made to direct Nancy to continue working on this and bringing it back for the 28th meeting.
So I move to direct Nancy to continue working on this to reflect tonight's comments, and we can reevaluate this at the March 28th meeting.
Nicely done. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Pauline Thompson seconded.
Okay.
And then just quick discussion. We'll, the March 28th meeting, we'll talk about it, but we won't do any voting until April, correct?
Well, actually, it needs to be, the 28th meeting needs to be a special meeting if we, if there will be action, if we decide we have something we can want to send forward.
Well, your motion tonight should include the possibility that you're going to act on it. That way you're able to if you want to. You need to say what we direct Nancy to move forward, and we will continue our discussion with an eye towards making a decision. And that way everybody is clear that a decision might be made.
I mean, he used the word reevaluate. I think, I mean, that's a different way. It depends on how specific, because if you're going to say discussions.
Eye towards making a decision is what he said.
Yeah, I mean,
with eye towards making a decision.
So
I'm just saying it doesn't have to be.
Rather than changing it, can I offer a friendly amendment to the motion?
Okay, great, Nancy.
To add with the intent of taking action.
Okay, so the motion was directing Nancy Tosta to continue working on the
waiting. Someone has a second.
I second that.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Okay,
so that's a friendly motion.
It's an amendment.
It's a motion. Okay.
Friendly amendment.
Sorry. The motion is direct Nancy Tosta to continue working on the on this ordinance.
He just said on this.
On this. This.
RV.
No, you can't add words to what he said.
This ordinance.
On this.
To continue working on this, to reflect on tonight's comments, and we have reevaluate on the March 22nd meeting with the intent of taking action.
Thank you.
Even if you know what he meant, you can't add words unless you're going to end it.
The 28th, not the
22nd. That's good.
Yeah, 28.
I literally got the
28th. But since it was an amendment, I think we have to vote on the amendment and then we vote on the full motion.
I think it with a friendly motion, a friendly amendment.
It doesn't require a vote. I did use that word.
Yes.
The person who made the motion agrees and the second agrees, you don't have to vote on it.
Okay.
Can we vote?
So can I have a vote?
Pauline Thompson, aye.
Nancy Tosta, aye.
Daryl, aye.
Elena, aye.
Yeah, aye. Okay. I need to use the restroom.
Who originally seconded Daryl?
I did.
Colleen.
I did.
Mm-hmm. So the final discussion is action items, and I would really like to spend at least a half an hour on that, if that's at all feasible for people. It is 10, or we can have it in our 28th meeting.
Yeah, can we move it forward?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to go pretty soon here, Tina.
Okay, all right, so.
Could we add that?
Okay. Okay. Let's add that to, can I just make one comment that I would like to work with Erin on her request between now and then? And her request specifically was dealing with the applications for the ordinances for, the RV, which we didn't pass. So I, conditional use one?
Conditional use. Would be good for can we do it temporary?
Oh, the temporary use. Yeah, let's do a temporary use rep. Okay, let's do that one. Okay, so I would like to do that in the next 2 weeks for just to get something else.
And I would volunteer. I'm going to be gone all next week. So I was going to volunteer for that, but I won't be here all of next week. So I know you wanted it done in 2 weeks. So if you want to.
Okay, well, we'll try and do that.
Yeah,
and,
Daryl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move that forward in some form, either with two of us or one, and that will be, we'll get that together. Okay. All right, so the upcoming, oh, does anybody have a final public comment? Okay, thank you. Oh, don't you.
Mark Nelson. I just wanted to remind you that when you tie this to the building permit, you have to figure out how you're going to do that. Is it going to be a current building permit or in segments? You know, just keep in mind you need to figure out some way to tie those together. Permit.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so upcoming meeting. So we now have the RV revision and then definitely the, we need to get onto our, all of the comments that were made tonight moving forward on 174 point.
What?
SB1. 74. That needs to.
But we don't continue for another half an hour.
That needs to be addressed. I will send out a list of all the ones that I picked up from Caden and Lee, and I guess it was just Caden and Lee that I have those, and then. If there's any other items that someone wants to actually give me, I want that list done before the next meeting. I mean,
so you're talking about action items for subdivision. Is that
action items that we need to deal with? Whatever you think is important based on the information that you know that we're working on.
For one SB 174 or everything? See, I'm trying to
would like to get a list of things that we want to work on so we can start to prioritize and get them down. So it doesn't have to be on 174, but it needs to be based on what we know we need to be working on getting going forward. And I'd like to make a priority of that list.
I see.
So we're not losing anything. We're not losing bylaws. We're not losing.
Yes. Yeah, so
all these things that we're the general plan, definitely be that top of the list.
Okay,
is there any other question?
Do that on the 28th?
I would like it to us to have a list for that meeting.
You
and
want
so,
it set to you ahead
of yes,
so
I want
this
it.
This is item number 10 here. Basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, I want it sent to me so we have the list so then we can have somewhere to talk about it. Would that work for people?
Want to give a deadline? Even if it's the day before the meeting, or five. You want to say when you want the list, or do you just want them to come to the meeting with the list?
It's in the parking lot for the last like 40 minutes.
I would like to have the list for the meeting, and you know, we have always tried to have things together by Monday or Tuesday, so that would be nice to have that. And then you might repeat what we've already given. I'll start the list and send it out right away. I can even put it on a Google Drive so you can just add to it. If that's going to work, if that would work for people.
So you want it no later than the 25th?
That would be great. I'll start a Google Drive so that everybody has a chance to add to that. And that includes a decision on for Lee too, as far as moving his request forward for the meeting on the 1st of April.
Mm.
So I think arguments on that, I think I don't know, you can't really argue on that, but we're not going to have a discussion, but I think that you need to come to that meeting knowing what you're going to say, and we will make a motion to move forward one way or the other. Okay.
Is there a reason that we start every meeting at 7? Like, I know that the regular meetings are set, but even when you run into a 3-hour meeting and you start at 7, then we're at the 10 o'clock hour. Like, right. We kind of know that these meetings are going to go long. Does everyone love 7 to 10? Maybe they do, and I'm the only one who doesn't.
Are you suggesting March 28th we start at 6?
I'd love that. The 25th? Yes, I do. 28. You know, like, it's one of those things where...
Elena is grumbling.
I don't mind when it's not the summer, but in the summer... when it's light to late with the farm and stuff, it feels so hard to get somewhere having eaten dinner by 6 o'clock for me.
Okay. When do you start? When would you not want it to start at 6?
I guess depends on the light, but it's just easier to make it consistent, I guess. Like, I mean, I'm saying like in March, if we wanted to do it, but in general, I would prefer not to do earlier. Just cause 7 feels like it comes quickly for me, even in the summer.
I agree with that. For the March one.
So the March one, we're thinking of doing it at 6 instead of 7.
Yeah, that would be fine. And with the work meetings, I'd be fine with like playing them by ear. I would just rather not make our regular standard earlier.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Have I covered everything? For the upcoming. Okay, with no objections, I'd like to move to adjourn the meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thanks, Lee.